And we welcome you into another edition of Saturday Tailgate each and every week at 9 a.m. here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are presented by Mafiosa's Pizzeria with locations at 12 South and Franklin. Abbreviated show today, just 1 hour. We're with you until 10 o'clock, leading you into Kentucky and MTSU. Nick Cale here in The Game, Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Julian Council in Charlotte, North Carolina this morning from an undisclosed secret broadcast location, and I have been told by multiple sources, reportedly helping North Carolina recruit random three-star prospects. Julian, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, man. Was talking to the kids last night trying to figure out, hey, guys, we need you real bad. Larry and the boys struggling again, year two. Got to figure it out how much you want in the bag. But, yeah, man, I'm happy to be here. Back home for the Thanksgiving holiday over at WFNZ Sports Radio here in Charlotte. My good friends here helped me out with a secret bunker location. Apparently, I had Doug Gottlieb was in here yesterday polluting this mic, so I can't wait to further pollute it with you this next hour or so.
All right, so let's do it. Now, it's not the greatest of Saturdays for college football, but nonetheless, Captain Kurt, we do have our Saturday spotlight.
Matchups this weekend in college football.
Obviously, next weekend, a big weekend in college football with rivalry weekend, but a few games today of note, and we will look at the college football playoff, and we'll start it off in the Saturday spotlight with Notre Dame taking on Syracuse at Yankee Stadium today. The number 3 Fighting Irish, 10-0 on the season. They take on number 12 Syracuse, who comes in 8-2. It's a 1:30 Central kickoff on NBC.
The only game today that matters. Literally, like, this is such a disappointing Saturday. I know all week long people have been talking about, like, well, you know, this is how it goes every year. The SEC, they take this week off, and the SEC is smarter for doing that. And I really don't see the benefits. Like, okay, so you play an FCS school now that makes you have a better chance of getting to the national championship? No, you have a better chance of getting the national championship because you have Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter who they play, whether they're playing Citadel today or they're playing East Poughkeepsie State early in the season. It doesn't matter. Alabama is going to find a way to win the SEC every year and go to the college football playoff and then subsequently win a national championship. Either way, I am kind of excited about this game outside of Notre Dame's uniforms. Syracuse, Dino Babers, Gino Babers, as Mike Francesa, the sports pope, knows them as. He's done a great job up there with Syracuse. Eric Dungy is one of 3 quarterbacks in the country right now who has over 8,000 yards passing and close to 2,000 yards rushing throughout his career. He's been tremendous all season long for them. Kind of shaky defensively, but I think they can offer a pretty big test today to Notre Dame in the last hurdle prior to them potentially getting to their first college football playoff.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would be surprised when they hear this, but this series actually started over 113 years ago, going back to 1914. Now, Notre Dame, coming off of the beatdown of Florida State last week, they won 42-13. Ian Book probably returns today after that one-week injury, although Brandon Wimbush, the senior, looked good last week against Florida State. If he needs to play at any point today, I think Notre Dame would be okay, but this is a really interesting game because Syracuse, I'm trying to figure out the dynamic of Yankee Stadium today. Obviously, Syracuse close to New York City, just a few hours north. Notre Dame's got a big following in many major markets. I'm curious to know what the dynamic will be from a fan standpoint. I would think there's more Notre Dame fans, but I got to believe Syracuse is going to represent pretty well today.
Yeah, I know Syracuse brands themselves as New York's college team, even though they're, what, like 4 hours north of the city.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of course, Syracuse alums in the area. There's plenty of alums of every school in New York City. But this is a Shamrock Series Notre Dame home game, and Notre Dame is the college football team of the Northeast. While Syracuse might be New York's college team, mm-hmm. Notre Dame is the Northeast college football team. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be a decent split. I don't really know how many Syracuse fans have bought into the program. I would hope they would have at this point, sitting here at 8-2 with a chance to have a 10-win season. And who knows, maybe an outside chance still, even with a loss, to get into one of those New Year's Six bowls. So I expect there'll be a lot of Syracuse fans, but I still feel like it's going to be a predominantly Notre Dame crowd today at Yankee Stadium.
May the Orange have scored 40-plus points in their last four games. Dino Babers has his team rolling, bowl eligible for the first time since 2013. And I know we've talked a lot about Notre Dame and how they've been since the transition from Brandon Wimbush to Ian Book. And you pointed out Eric Dungy and the statistics. I mean, he is, of those three guys, the two guys that he's in the same company with is Trace McSorley from Penn State, Mackenzie Milton from UCF. I believe Trace McSorley was Kirk Herbstreit's preseason Heisman prediction. Milton's gone a 22-game win streak. So Eric Dungy's a good quarterback. He's not just the other quarterback in this matchup today.
Yeah, and also it's kind of weird that dynamic that's been up there at Syracuse this year, because there's been games, and throughout Eric Dungy's career, he's failed to finish the final four games of his season. This year, it looks like he's healthy enough. He's going to do that. Hopefully, no injury occurs. But even still, there's been times where Tommy DeVito, who was a five-star Uber recruit at a Don Bosco prep up there in New Jersey, who some of his peers, Elite 11 peers at least, Jake Fromm, Tua Tagovailoa, are some of the bigger names in college football as we know, while DeVito's had to sit there behind Dungy not only this season but last season. But there's been times where Dino Babers has kind of changed things up and gone with DeVito, because remember the North Carolina game in which Syracuse won in double overtime? Mm-hmm. They actually brought in DeVito to win that game for them late in the fourth quarter to bring him back from two touchdowns bat down and then get him into overtime and then win that game in overtime. So I'm very curious to see, you know, how Dino Babers handles this tonight. If he thinks Eric Dungy maybe doesn't have it and they maybe get down against Notre Dame early, does he go to Tommy DeVito? I think it's something that people should look out for, because DeVito absolutely is capable of helping Syracuse win this game if called upon.
Yeah, and as you said, Mike Francesa might not know who Dino Babers is, but the country might get to know him tonight if they can somehow pull off the upset of Notre Dame. Could very well come down to Syracuse's offensive line holding up against that Notre Dame defensive line. Let's get to the other matchup today, UCF and Cincinnati. Now, UCF hosting College Game Day today, so I'm sure you're pretty happy that a non-traditional game day site is welcoming in the boys.
Let's go. Thank you, ESPN College Game Day. Welcome to our city.
Defending national champs, 22 in a row, the disrespect. So let's look at UCF, not just from the matchup against Cincinnati tonight, but what would UCF's path to the playoff be right now? Because I really do not see a playoff scenario for them, not just this year, but moving forward. They're just not going to make it.
Yeah, Nick, first off, so happy they're going to be down there in Orlando. Me and Danny Cannell, we're both riding hard for UCF. Second off, glad you asked about the path to the playoff. I've been teasing since Thursday when we were on Darren and Donick this week. Mm-hmm. All right, path for UCF to go to the playoff. First off, there's like 7 points. One, got to win out. Two, Oklahoma and West Virginia, they need to split. So next week when they play in Morgantown, possibly in the snow, either West Virginia needs to win that or Oklahoma needs to win that, but both of them need to go to a Big 12 championship game, and whoever wins next week needs to win the following week. So get a split. That means a two-loss Big 12 champion. Point number three, Washington State in the Apple Cup next week loses to Washington. Washington then goes on to win the Pac-12 North. They're going to face a four- or five-loss team out of the Pac-12 South, whether it's Arizona State or Utah, mm-hmm. meaning three-loss Washington or four- or five-loss Pac-12 champ. Pac-12 completely out of it at that point. Then in the SEC, Alabama wins out. They're going to get in regardless whether they win to lose this week to the Citadel or lose next week. Bama's already in the playoff. Then you kind of maybe need Georgia to lose to Georgia Tech next week, or they need to get blown up by Alabama. Also would help if LSU loses that to A&M. So that's like 4A, B, and C there with the SEC. Notre Dame needs to lose today and next week at USC. You need South Carolina and the ACC Coastal Champ to upset Clemson. So South Carolina needs to beat Clemson next week. And then Pitt, I guess, is who's going to decide to come to Charlotte and, you know, test Clemson. They have to upset Clemson. Then in the Big Ten, you need Michigan or Ohio State to lose to Northwestern in the Big Ten title game. If those things happen, UCF cannot be denied a spot in the playoff, as they would be an undefeated team. The only other unbeaten would be Alabama, and you would have a two-loss ACC champ, a two-loss Big 12 champ, a 3-4 or 5-loss Pac-12 champ, and a two-loss Big 10 champ. In that moment, UCF, the Knights cannot be denied. Finally, we'll have a chance to win a national championship. And maybe they won't even be a 4 seed. We're talking like 3 seed UCF right there, Nick.
So basically, they have a better chance of playing Powerball and hitting a winning ticket.
It's possible. All of yous were out there 2 weeks ago thinking you were going to win the Mega Millions. You're going to go out there and ruin your life by spending millions of dollars on who God knows what. So why can't you say UCF has a chance? UCF has a better chance of that than any of you Joes out here going to the gas station, buying one of these Powerball tickets, and hitting Mega Millions. I'm just saying.
Here's a stat if you're a UCF guy. The lowest ranked team at this point in November in the college football playoff era to make the playoff was number 9 Michigan State. That was in 2015, and they ended up getting in. They played Alabama, and they got barbecued. So yeah. UCF, nice. Here's what UCF has to hang their hat on. You hosted game day today. Mm-hmm. You've won 22 in a row. Mm-hmm. You basically are the Group of Five champions, and you have the best record in the state of Florida. Your record is better than Florida State, Florida, Miami, FIU, FAU, and every other program in between. That's what you have to hang your hat on. You're never sniffing the playoffs.
No respect.
All right, quickly as we wrap up the Saturday spotlight, two games that I do think are interesting to watch. Number 16, Iowa State at number 15, Texas. And then also in the Big 12, number 9, West Virginia against Oklahoma State. And I just love that matchup from a coaching standpoint. Holgorsen against Gundy, the Skullet against the Mullet.
Yeah, I guess you look at that, the second game you brought up, the West Virginia-Oklahoma State game. I wonder how much Oklahoma State has after last week where Mike Gundy decided to go for two and the win on the road in Norman, where, you know, that's an emotional game. Can you bounce back against a West Virginia team who has their eyes set on going to the college football playoff? And it's also one of those textbook trap games for West Virginia. You have Oklahoma at home next week. You know that Oklahoma State's a decent team, but still it's a team that you should beat. Are you going to be looking ahead to Oklahoma, who you likely have to beat twice if things work out? And then also you look at the Texas-Iowa State game. Apparently there's an outside chance for not only Texas, but Iowa State could find a way into the Big 12 championship game. I don't see it happening. I think it's still going to be Oklahoma in West Virginia, but there's still a chance that maybe one of those teams get in there. And then Texas, your preseason Big 12 champ, will finally be back on track.
good thing that you put the on track on there, because they're definitely not back, but they could be back on track.
Saturday, let me say this, though, yeah, Nick. The only thing that can derail Texas right now and Tom Herman's trajectory towards getting Texas back to where at least they should be necessarily in a college football landscape is Zach Smith continuously tweeting and somehow just throwing a Molotov cocktail into the situation down there in Austin and destroying not only the Texas football program, but maybe even Tom Herman's marriage.
Ooh, that is a burn bright and early on the Saturday tailgate. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, we're with you each and every Saturday from 9 to 11. Shorter show this week, just 1 hour. We're going to lead you up until 10 o'clock, Kentucky MTSU pregame. I'm in Nashville. Julian is in Charlotte. When we come back, it is time for the SEC swing, and we will focus in on Tennessee and Vanderbilt and their chances at bowl eligibility. That's next. Saturday tailgate rolls on ESPN 102.5, The Game. And we welcome you back into Saturday Tailgate here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's all presented by Mafiosa's Pizzeria with locations in 12 South and Franklin. Nick Hale here in the Game Nashville studios. Julian Council in Charlotte, North Carolina. Coming up later today on ESPN 102.5 The Game, MTSU in Kentucky. Pregame gets started at 10 o'clock. And then we've got the Kings and the Preds tonight pregame at 6. If you're looking for the Alabama beatdown of Citadel today at 11 o'clock, that's on ESPN 94.9 Game 2. And then MTSU Kentucky, if you want the Kentucky feed, you can get that at 11:30 on 93.3 Classic Hits. Julian Council, let's get to the SEC swing.
Now, let's focus in on the Southeastern Conference.
Take it, all three. One, two, three.
With SEC swing. Quick thought on every SEC matchup this weekend.
All right, let's focus in on the bowl chances of both Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Julian Council, who now has the best chance to become bowl eligible when we talk Vols and we talk Vandy?
You sure you don't want to focus in on Chattanooga, South Carolina?
Well, we could focus in on Bama Citadel, although I think they would actually score 35 if Captain Kurt was at quarterback today for the Crimson Tide.
You're right. You know, Rice in LSU is a big kind of recruiting game. LSU Coach O likes to go down there in Houston, get some talent. As far as Tennessee Vanderbilt, who has a better chance to get to a bowl game, I would say it has to be the Vols at this point. And honestly, my mother always told me, give credit when credit's due. Jeremy Pruitt absolutely is owed credit right now for what he's done for this program so far. They're 5-5, so of course things could be derailed and they go 5-7. I think they will find a way to get to a bowl game. I actually think they win today against Missouri, despite the number being, what, like 5.5 right now, which was very puzzling to me. But, you know, Derek Dooley revenge game, so I guess Vegas is focusing in on that. But, you know, Tennessee has played really well this season, and you know, in certain parts. You know, they haven't really turned the ball over that much outside of that Florida game where they had the disastrous 6 turnovers. But outside of that, Tennessee, you know, has been fairly good offensively as far as Jerick Garantano goes. They ran the ball really well against Kentucky front last week. That has been one of the better rushing defenses, not only in the SEC, but in the country this year. You know, defensively, they've really bought into what Jeremy Pruitt has had. He's been trying to sell them and kind of the philosophies that he's brought over from Alabama. So I give him a lot of credit. I think that they should be able to win against Missouri today and then maybe even beat Vanderbilt next week, who has been their daddy, if we're being honest, the last couple of years. And at that point, you're looking at 7-5, and then, dare I say, 8-5 for the Vols, and then the hype train goes out of control once again leading into 2019. I think despite even if they are able to get to 7, maybe even 8 wins, people should still take a deep breath and realize it's a long process and that this program is a long, long ways away from not only Georgia but also Alabama.
Well, your mom raised you properly. Give credit where credit is due. So you're going to give credit to Jeremy Pruitt, but you have to give credit to your partner who has been saying for months and months the Tennessee Volunteers would win 7 games, whether it's 6 plus a bowl or 7, and then get to a bowl game and, dare I say, win 8 games.
6 plus a bowl doesn't count. That does not count.
Okay, well then 7. And look, if you think about it, if you look at their schedule, I mean, obviously I think the easy answer when we compare Tennessee versus Vandy is the Vols, because they're 5-5. Vandy's 4-6. You only need one more win if you're Tennessee. Vandy needs 2. But you look at the schedule coming up. You've got Missouri today. Yeah. I think it'll be more difficult than Kentucky because Missouri's playing better ball. I think it's a tougher matchup to go against Drew Locke than it is a ground-and-pound team like Kentucky. But then they've got Vandy next week, and we know there'll be more Vols fans on the West End than Vandy fans. So I think the easy answer is Tennessee. But for something, so there's something about today with Vanderbilt and Ole Miss where I feel like Vanderbilt's going to win that game. And I don't know why, because they don't win close games. They don't win many SEC games. But yet here I am, and I feel like they win today.
Yeah, I feel that way too. Vanderbilt has had success against Ole Miss the last 2 years. I know they lost last year down there in Oxford at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. But Kyle Shurmur has had some of his best games in his career throwing the ball against Ole Miss. And that Ole Miss defense is terrible. At least Vanderbilt has some semblance of a way to stop people, where Ole Miss is just like, you know what, hey, Jordan Ta'amu, we need 500 yards, 200 rushing, please. Do something, put up 60, 70 points, and then maybe the defense will give you a chance. Mm-hmm. In all likelihood, they won't. So that's one of the positives you have for Vanderbilt. I know there's probably going to be far more Ole Miss fans there today. I know there's a decent contingent in the Nashville area, and that will probably be traveling up from even the Memphis area on right there on the corner of the border of the state of Mississippi, whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think Vanderbilt probably should win this game. Keyshawn Vaughn, eventually now, he's been like kind of made the lead back, something that they wanted to do a couple of weeks ago. I don't know why they didn't start doing that at the beginning of the season when the reports were that he was the best back that they had there. But apparently, you know, let's give the ball to Jamari Wakefield and Kari Blossengay instead of giving it to the best back, which they finally figured out, and things are now working out for them. Maybe had they done it earlier, they wouldn't be in a situation where they needed to win their last 2 games, both at home, to be able to get to a bowl game. Also, you know, maybe don't blow a lead against Mizzou last week.
Yeah, that would help. Let's look at the two coaches for these programs. Obviously, Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, Derek Mason at Vanderbilt. Let's start with Derek Mason. How should Vanderbilt view Mason if he misses out on a bowl game this year with Kyle Shurmur? Because you look at this offense, and you alluded to Keyshawn Vaughn, obviously Kalijah Lipscomb, Pinkney the tight end is going to be probably a second or third round pick in the NFL draft. Right. Kyle Shurmur could very well be a 10-year backup in the NFL. If they don't reach a bowl game with this caliber of weaponry on offense, when will they ever get there with Derek Mason?
Yeah, and that's a good point, because you're going to have not only an NFL quarterback, a guy who's likely to hold a clipboard for maybe 10, 12 years, which is a noble profession, and I applaud anyone who can do it.
It's a good life if you can get it.
If I could do it, I would have done it, man. But yeah, for someone like that and Kyle Shurmur, and also you bring up, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn might have a chance, the tight end Pinkney, who knows who else on that roster might be able to turn themselves into an NFL player. To have that, mainly just a quarterback position, and not to be able to get to a bowl game, at least just one, in a Kyle Shurmur era, That would hurt. And I guess I have no idea who's going to be the quarterback next year. I know the guy that they were thinking was going to be the backup this year, he got suspended for the season. Whether he comes back next year or not, that's still to be determined. But for Vanderbilt, it's tough because the resources aren't there. And I guess that's only like an excuse you can use so often, because there's some of these games that they're in. And we talked about it yesterday on Darren and Donick, how, you know, does resources, recruiting have anything to do with being up 21-3 and blowing that game? And I also kind of responded by saying, well, you probably shouldn't be up 21-3 on Florida anyway. But, yeah, if you're going to be, you may as well go ahead and win the game, especially at home in a day, like 11 o'clock game at Vanderbilt Stadium. I just don't know moving forward when they're going to have another opportunity to have a quarterback of this caliber, and even, you know, kind of close to this caliber, like a Jordan Rodgers caliber maybe, who can help them get back to a position where we need to win one or two games at the end of the season and it'll get into a bowl game. And then you look at especially the trajectory of what Georgia's program is. Florida, I think, under Dan Mullen, is going to get back to where they need to be. South Carolina's kind of fallen back a bit to where I think they should be under Will Muschamp this season. And in Tennessee, it's only a matter of time, I think, until Jeremy Pruitt can at least make them a team that should be beating Vanderbilt every year, instead of, you know, going to that game wondering, are we actually going to win this game, or is Vandy going to hand it down to us again?
So let's look at it from the Pruitt perspective for Tennessee, and obviously he's at a different end of the spectrum, but let's go for SEC Coach of the Year. Now, I want to, for this exercise, let's remove Nick Saban and let's remove Kirby Smart, because those could be obvious choices, and it's like the Phil Jackson effect, it's the LeBron James effect. You could give them Coach of the Year or the MVP every single year. So let's look at Pruitt. If Pruitt would win out and get to 7 wins, if Kentucky would win out and get to 9 wins. Now, Kentucky is 7-3. They've got the Blue Raiders today. They'll go to Louisville next week and score 92 points on the Cardinal. They get to 9-3. And then let's look at LSU with Ed Orgeron. They're 8-2. They have Rice and Texas A&M left. If they win out and get to 10-2, where would you, if you had a vote, where would you vote? Would you go 7 wins with Pruitt, 9 wins with Stoops, or 10 wins with Coach O?
Yeah, I mean, for the purpose of the exercise, I can't pick Saban. Who I would pick, because the Coach of the Year in all sports has now become basically who has overachieved, who you'd expect to do as well as it did, not necessarily who the best coach that year was. And I think Nick Saban deciding to go to a Tagovailoa, which, you know, seemed for a lot of people to be the obvious choice, but being able to have the offense that they have, and also they had to replace 6 assistant coaches this year. And Mike Locksley, the OC there at Alabama, I don't think has gotten nearly enough credit for the type of job he's done with that offense this year, and being the best offense Alabama has possibly ever had, especially with an aerial attack. So
yep,
can't pick Saban. So that's who I'd pick. And also Broyles Award, I'd give to Mike Locksley, the OC at Alabama. But in terms of this exercise, I would have to still go with Mark Stoops up there in Kentucky. I understand the last 2 weeks kind of take off, you know, come from the shine of the season being 7-1 and losing at home to Georgia, and even the loss to Tennessee in a year where you hadn't won there since 84 up there at Neyland Stadium. Maybe you thought that this is the team to beat Tennessee, but then again, it kind of makes sense. 18 to 22 year old young men playing a game a week after losing an SEC East title game at home at Commonwealth Stadium, Kroger Field parking lot, whatever you want to call it. So I'd still give to Stoops. Tennessee, Jeremy Pruitt's done a great job. It's one of those situations where he came in with, I feel like, a first 22 that had plenty of enough talent to compete with basically anyone in the SEC, which you've seen in them being able to beat Auburn, who has struggled at times this year, but still beating Auburn. Than last week, just owning Kentucky. It was the depth part of that team that you had concerns about, and Garantano's come along. So he's done a good job, but Tennessee might have gone 4-8 last year, but they never had 4-8 talent. Mm-hmm. They're about, you know, a 6-7 win team. They're about as far as talent-wise. I just wasn't sure coming in the season how they would mesh under the new coaching staff. So I'd still give it to Mark Stoops, because I don't think anyone had any thought that with Terry Wilson and the worst passing offense in the SEC that they would even be in position to win the SEC East this year. So I'd give it to Kentucky if they get 9 wins.
Yeah, I would agree with you, because if you look at preseason win totals and what Vegas had for over-unders on certain teams, Kentucky has clearly had the most wins above the experts' expectations. Although I got to admit when I'm wrong, and I have no problem doing it. I said on this show back around Labor Day weekend that I thought LSU would be a 7-win team. Ed Orgeron would get fired. He would not be the guy. So if he gets to 10 wins, and I get it, they've got some talent, but to get 10 wins with this coach, I mean, this would be kind of like a Les Miles type season, double digit wins. It would be very difficult. I'd still go Stoops, but I think Coach O would have a significant case to be made.
Yeah, I think Coach Joe's done a great job, and I think mainly it's just we have never given him the respect that potentially he deserves, at least kind of, just giving him a clean slate, because everyone thinks back to the Ole Miss and how he handled that program and how it was a complete disaster. Did well at USC after Lane Kiffin got fired on the tarmac, went 6-2 there, just never really fit into what they wanted to have there at USC. Kind of ended up with Sark, and then they ended up with Clay Helton. So, you know, USC, joke's on you, it looks like. But Coach O came in a situation where LSU, I think the administration kind of did it to themselves, the way that people perceived Coach O out on the outside, and also the way he was just perceived within his own university system, when Joe Leib was basically saying, like, hey, I'll hire you, but you need to be able to bring Lane Kiffin to be your OC, and we're going to retain Dave Aranda, and we're going to pay him like $3 million a year. He's going to be the highest paid defensive coordinator and coordinator, period. And then you're just going to sit there, you're going to recruit, you're going to motivate, you're going to do your Coach O thing, but you're not going to get in the way of LSU contending for SEC championship and potentially college football playoff championship. That whole thing didn't work out. Of course, Kiffin didn't go there. He went to FAU, and then they brought in Matt Canada. We know how that worked out. Matt Canada's done a tremendous job at Maryland under the circumstances in which Jordan McNair's death, and then following that was losing DJ Durkin, the head coach. He's done a great job up there, but now he has Steven Minger. He's more comfortable with his offense and kind of that program, and feels comfortable in his own skin. So I think he's done a good job. As far as SEC Coach of the Year, I just don't see it. I think he's done a good job. I just don't think he's been the best coach in the SEC this season behind, Mark Stoops and Nick Saban.
All right, coming up in about 15 minutes, it'll be time for our Saturday selections. But when we come back, if you missed the news last night, if you're just waking up, the Mad Hatter is back in college football. We will get into that and all the head coaching openings, as well as potential openings around the landscape of college football. That is coming up next on Saturday Tailgate. He's Julian Council. I'm Nick Kale, right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Saturday Tailgate here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Kale in the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Link Mount Juliet. Julian Council in Charlotte, North Carolina. Saturday selections
QC
coming up in just about 12 minutes. But Julian, we got to get to the head coach openings in college football, potential changes that could happen at season's end. And last night, reports started coming out that it was all but finalized. Les Miles back in college football. Rock Chalk Hatter, head coach at Kansas University. What do you think about that?
Thank you. Thank you, God. Thank you, college football gods. The hat is back in Kansas. I wonder how the grass taste down there in Lawrence. I'm so happy to have him back in college football. Now, that's one thing. Also, the other thing is this a good hire for Kansas? Because it doesn't really make a lot of sense for me. How old is Les Miles? He's like 64?
He could be 64. He could be 84. He could be 104.
65. I just feel like this is a bad hire for Kansas, because a program like that historically has been dreadful and has not been good since they got rid of our big guy, Eric Mangino, whatever it was, dude who had Aqib Talib and Todd Reesing and went to the Orange Bowl against Virginia Tech. Whatever the coach's name. Basically, he like did something to a player.
The Fighting Manginos?
Yeah. Eric Mangino. Because there's so many Mangini type guys. Eric Mangino.
I think it was Mark Mangini.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, since they got rid of him.
I think Mark Mangini spent too much time at Mafioso's Pizzeria, if you know what I mean.
Which is fine.
But here's the deal. Like, how can you say it's a bad hire when you are – I mean, if you think about college football teams that are just typically atrocious, that are without a doubt a basketball program, and you hire a head coach who's got a win percentage of 72.1%.
Sure.
He's got a BCS national championship. He's been to two. He won more games percentage-wise at LSU than Nick Saban did. This is a home run hire for a school that really flat out stinks at football.
It's a home run hire in name value, and this is why they brought Jeff Long, the former Arkansas AD, to be their AD, so they could focus in on more things than just basketball, which they might have problems with. FBI still there, coming for you, Bill Self. I just wonder, looking at the landscape of Kansas, this is the type of program where you need to get a ton of JUCO guys to go there. That's how K-State, that's how Bill Snyder has built his program. It's how a lot of those Midwestern schools that don't have the appeal of like an Oklahoma, like a Texas, or an Ohio State, a Michigan, have been able to build their programs. So I just wonder, what are his ties there? Because he hasn't been in that area. He hasn't been in Oklahoma State since, 2004, when he was the last time he was the head coach there?
Yep.
So it's been about 13, 14 years since Les Miles has been in that situation. And also, I mean, Kansas, the amount of resources, the stadium, it's not necessarily even close to what Oklahoma State has, because they have T. Boone Pickens, who puts a truckload of money into that school every year, and, of course, the resources that you have down at LSU and the SEC. So I just wonder,
at 65, does he have the kind of energy? And I'm not trying to be an ageist. I'm just wondering, does he have the kind of energy in knowing that he's going to have to really roll up his sleeves? He's going to have to work really hard on the recruiting trail in the JUCO areas, and he's going to have to really go to these fundraisers and these booths and be like, hey, we need money. Allen Fieldhouse is fine. We need more money for football facilities. And is he going to be able to convince guys from Texas who want to go up to Kansas? That's my whole thing. And he's got to get guys who understand the Kansas landscape and the JUCO landscape in that state to want to be able to be a part of his staff. Otherwise, I don't know if he's going to be able to succeed. And then also, like the offense he used to run, that's not going to work nowadays. You have to modernize. That's been part of the reason why they got rid of him at LSU, because he could recruit the best of them. He just couldn't find a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And also, even if he had a quarterback, he didn't run and type an offense that was even attractive at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what the quarterback situation down there is Lawrence right now, but they don't find a quarterback and they don't run an offense that is in the modern era of college football. I don't see how Les Miles or anyone at Kansas is going to succeed.
No, you totally nailed it. I mean, he can recruit, he can motivate, he'll get you fired up, but I don't think he's a great in-game X's and O's strategic coach. He's very stubborn. He wants to run the ball. He wants to play football like it's 1997 and not 2018.
Right.
So that'll be his biggest challenge. But if Bill Snyder can do what he did at Kansas State, and with Bill Snyder likely on his way out the door very shortly in Manhattan, I don't think there's any reason why Les Miles can't have Kansas, you know, in that 7-8 win range. Every couple of years they win 9 or 10 games. Maybe they backdoor their way into a Big 12 championship game. I think he could make Kansas a respectable team that occasionally pulls the upset against one of the Big 12 powers.
Right, and for me, with these schools that are, I guess, quote-unquote basketball schools, it comes down to how badly do you actually want to win. That's what it really comes down to. Because I think about North Carolina, who's in a situation where people talk about they can get rid of Larry Fedora. They had a chance nowadays. You know, we've seen how Ohio State handled Urban Meyer, and that he's still coaching there. We saw how Baylor didn't want to get rid of Art Briles. North Carolina with Butch Davis, he didn't really necessarily have his hands all over the situation with John Blake and some of those players who took impermissible benefits. He could have still been there, but North Carolina was like, we are, you know, an academic institution, and now they've since kind of been tarnished because of the paper classes that came off of that whole investigation inside the football program. But there's one of those situations where bigger schools like USC, Ohio State, Alabama, maybe they'd be like, you know what, Butch, we're going to hang out with you because we want to win. And that's the same thing with Kansas. Like, Bill Self, we'll see how the whole FBI thing plays out. But I feel like they're going to hold on to him as best they can because he's taken the Final Four. He's won a national championship. How badly does Kansas want to win? How badly do schools like UCLA want to win? They just hired Chip Kelly, but still across town you have USC, who's investing far more in football than you are. It comes down to these schools. How badly do you want to win? If they get less miles of resources to win, then they will win. And Jeff Long at least is the right AD for them to try and hone in and focus in on being a better football program.
So let's look at some of the other openings. Obviously, Louisville, the obvious answer seems to be Jeff Brohm to replace Bobby Petrino. But if it's not Jeff Brohm, if he doesn't leave Purdue, there's a handful of names that could be viable candidates. What do we make of that?
Yeah, I would say if it's not going to be Jeff Brohm, and no one knows whether he grew up, you know, dreaming of being the head coach at Louisville. Of course, he's from Louisville. He played there, played professionally. It's, you know, sometimes guys' dreams aren't to go back home. And we'll see how that works out. But if it's not going to be him, Neil Brown is kind of the name I've heard of. He's from Danville, Kentucky. He knows the landscape there. He actually played football at the University of Kentucky under Hal Mumme. So I don't know whether he wants to go to the rival school in Louisville, but at least he has ties to the state and understands the recruiting landscape of the state. And maybe here's a kind of an outside-of-the-box hire, I think, potentially, because Neil Brown is one of those young guys. He's only 38, and he's done well at Troy, beating LSU last year, as we all know. What about Bo Pelini? But Bo Pelini, because you think about the way that Mark Stoops has really done well at Kentucky, he's done it by going up into the state of Ohio and being able to win those recruiting battles, telling those guys, like, hey, Ohio State's going to pick whoever they want. Instead of going to Michigan State or Michigan or some of the other schools, how about you come down to Kentucky, play in the SEC where you have these awesome facilities, you get to play in these the best Saturday environments in college football. Maybe you get someone like a Bo Pelini who's done really well at Youngstown State and convince him, is like, hey, come down here. We've got these facilities. We've got the resources. We're in the ACC Atlantic, which you have Clemson. It's difficult, but still, we actually buy into – he's only 50 years old. He's been in a major college football program level. He's from Youngstown, Ohio. He has those recruiting ties. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Let me throw out a couple of names for you, whether it's at Louisville or Colorado possibly, or even a school like Maryland. Four names jump out to me. You tell me the likelihood of these guys leaving their current programs – to go for maybe what would be a step up. Charlie Strong, South Florida. Luke Fickell, Cincinnati, Ryan Day, Ohio State, and dare I even say it, Butch Jones. Would any of those four make sense at Louisville, Colorado, or Maryland?
I would say Ryan Day. It's interesting because there was reports earlier this season about him potentially being named a coach in waiting, and we had the conversation on the show yesterday about whether Urban Meyer would be back next year. I think Ryan Day might want to sit there and see how things work out at Ohio State, because if he's really as highly thought of as he was, because remember, he was considered to be an offense coordinator candidate for the Tennessee Titans back when Mike Vrabel got hired. And he was picking up, Kerry Coombs, who is a secondary coach. He's taking guys from Ohio State. So I'd see if I'm Ryan Day, I'd sit back there. Luke Fickell, I've heard that potentially Purdue might be a good landing spot for Luke Fickell. Stay in the Big Ten, be able to, or get back to the Big Ten, be at a program that is now kind of built up in the last 2 years by Jeff Brohm. I don't know how any of those guys will work with Colorado, because West Coast ties are a huge thing there. Because when they hired Mike McIntyre, he was coming over from San Jose State, where he had done a great job there, and he's still been able to recruit out there in California and like Texas and those kind of areas. It's very hard if you don't have those recruiting ties to the West Coast to be able to convince these kids, hey, from California to come out there to Colorado. So if you only have Midwest ties, I don't know how it would work out for you going to Colorado. So I don't see any of those guys necessarily fitting in Colorado. Also, we're not really sure whether Mike McIntyre is getting fired or not.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued by the Ryan Day situation, because if Urban Meyer steps down, we've talked about Ryan Day, but also everybody seems to link Matt Campbell at Iowa State to Ohio State. So do you think Ryan Day is the odds-on favorite to replace Urban Meyer should he leave Ohio State, or is it in fact Matt Campbell?
I would say, yeah, it is him, because just thinking about the fact that they were talking about making him the coach in waiting, and we've seen it happen before. Texas did the same thing with Will Muschamp. They dodged that bullet, even though, they really haven't hired great coaches since then anyways. I just feel like if that was the thought, and everything I've read and heard about Ryan Day and how people feel like he's like a great football mind and he's going to one day be a great football coach, why would Ohio State, allow him to go somewhere else if they really thought that highly of him? And then Matt Campbell, we see when he's done at Iowa State, that doesn't mean that's going to translate to a massive program in Ohio State. Because with Butch Jones, and you brought his name up, his biggest problem is I think Butch Jones is a fine coach, whether Tennessee fans want and like to hear that or not. I think he's an okay coach. The problem is he just reads too many of the press clippings, and he can't handle being in those type of programs where there's always a microscope on you. He doesn't have thick skin enough. Does Matt Campbell have the thick skin to leave from go to Ames, Iowa, and go up to Columbus, Ohio, where every day of the week all people are talking about is your program and how you are in that program and whether you are on right track to win a Big Ten championship and go to the College Football Playoff?
Maybe Butch would be able to handle it. He is in Tuscaloosa at the Nick Saban Coaching Rehabilitation Clinic. It works wonders. You pay a hefty price, but you know what? You come out there a better coach.
Very true. Very true.
Just saying. All right, when we come back, time for the Saturday selections as we wrap up an abbreviated edition of Saturday Tailgate presented by Mafiosa's Pizzeria with locations at 12 South and Franklin. Nick and Julian coming back with Saturday Picks next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Saturday Tailgate here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale and Julian Council with you. We're brought to you by Mafiosa's Pizzeria. Coming up later today, actually top of the hour, pregame right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, as MTSU will take on Kentucky. And then tonight at 6 o'clock pregame, as the Preds are back home at Bridgestone Arena to take on the Los Angeles Kings. If you're looking for the Alabama beatdown of the Citadel, that's coming up at 11 on ESPN 94.9 Game 2.
Yes. Give me the schedule of college football today. So
Alabama
excited.
Is the only team in the FBS to not allow a point in the month of November. Julian Council, does that continue today, or will the Citadel at least eke out a field goal?
Well, seeing as we're still kind of the same week of Veterans Day, they're going to allow the Citadel to score.
Okay.
Just once. One time.
It is now time, Captain Kurt, for the Saturday selections.
Closing in on kickoff around the nation. Time to make this week's picks against the spread.
Let's go. You know what we gotta do.
These are our Saturday selections.
That's right. Time to make some picks against the spread. Saturday selections. We do it each and every Saturday to wrap up the show. Last week I was 7-3 against the spread, so I had a bounce back week. Julian, did you keep track of your total from last week?
Yeah, man, I was 7-3 as well.
Okay, good week for both of us.
Doing pretty well.
70%. That's a winning weekend. That's actually an elite weekend. That's like the 1%. That's the best of the best. We got six games today, so let's start it off. You've got the spreads. Let's fire away.
Absolutely. Like Joe Flacco and unlike James Franklin's program, I am elite. First game we have is Utah at Colorado, a massive game down there in the Pac-12 South, which has just been an absolute disgrace outside of the ACC Coastal. And even the Big Ten West has been pretty bad this year after people thought that maybe it would be okay, which it wasn't. Utah is a 7-point road favorite at Colorado, who has a coach, doesn't have a coach. I'm not quite sure, but the Buffs have lost 5 in a row, and they need to get back on track and still have an outside chance to go back from worst to first in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, pretty interesting. They started off the season 5-0, and I'm referring to Colorado. I remember watching them on, I think it was FS1 or one of the channels, and Gus Johnson was doing one of their games, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, Colorado, okay, they're 5-0. They might be worth tracking, and they've completely imploded. I'm going to lay the 7 on the road. Give me Mr. Whittingham's program, and I'll lay the touchdown.
You know what? I really want to take the Buffs here because I went to Boulder one time, got to experience Pearl Street for like 3 hours. I thought this is the greatest place on earth. Like, how do they not go at football? How does not every single person come up here and look at those flat irons and say, yeah, I want to run with Ralphie. I want to be a Buff. I don't get that. So I think someone, if they get the right coach, they should be able to win. It just makes zero sense to me how they can't convince people to go there to Colorado. Maybe it's the snow. Not quite sure. I guess I'll take Utah. The fact that they lost Zach Moss, and they lost Tyler Huntley, their running back and quarterback respectively, and still were able to beat Oregon, who has just completely fallen off the earth. Have we heard from the quarterback up there in a while? I don't even remember his name anymore. Like, that's the thing. Like, what happened to Oregon?
Oh, yeah, that Justin Herbert kid.
Yeah, Herbert? Like, what happened to Herbert? We were talking about Heisman, first-round pick in the NFL. People are not even sure if he's going to come out after the Washington game. Then he was to Washington State after the greatest game day in the history of game days there in Pullman. And I haven't heard from him since.
Well, he heard that the New York Giants were scouting him and thinking about drafting him next year, so he just pretty much shut it down and went dark.
Okay, either way, I'm taking the Utes to win this game.
There you go.
To the Pac-12 championship for the first time in school history. West Virginia at Oklahoma State. West Virginia is a 6-point favorite on the road in Stillwater.
You know, I look at this, and I'm going to give you, here's next level analysis. Mike Gundy has a very nice set of hair, a very good mullet. But Dana Holgorsen, with the skullet, with the visor, I mean, it's real scrappy on the top, and it just flaps around in the back. That to me, when we're looking at swag, Dana Holgorsen is a 10 out of 10. I'll lay the 6 with West Virginia. Will Grier goes in. Okie State can't keep up.
Yeah, Oklahoma State is not going to be able to hang on from the fact that, you know what, forget that. I'm not going up against it. You know, I've already done this before this year. They have a quarterback named Corndog, and I've gone against them before. I'm not going against a quarterback named Corndog anymore. So I think West Virginia probably blows them out, but I don't care. I'm still taking Oklahoma State because their quarterback's named Corndog, and the only thing we can hope is that this game comes down to whether a 2-point conversion is going to happen or not, because we know both these coaches are going to do it. I hope no field goals are kicked, period.
Me too.
That Holgo and your boy, the mullet, just say, you know what, forget it. We're not kicking today. We're just going to go for two the whole time. So I'm going to take Oklahoma State.
I'm with you. I yearn for the day when kickers are eradicated from the sport.
Kicking is for cowards. Yep. Missouri at Tennessee. We both are basically giving our pick for this one. Mizzou, for whatever reason, is 6.5-point favorite. They are kneeling. I took Tennessee. You also took Tennessee, right?
Correct.
No?
Okay. Now, what's the number?
6.5.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Vols with the 6.5, although Missouri's going to win the game.
Oh, you got Mizzou winning the game.
I do.
Okay.
I'm not happy about it, but I pick games with my head, not my heart.
That's fine. If Tennessee loses and then Vanderbilt Ole Miss, which Vanderbilt is a 3-point favorite, I'm also going to take Vanderbilt in this game. If Tennessee loses and Vanderbilt wins, then that set up to a 5-6 matchup between both those teams next week. Winner goes to Shreveport.
Mm-hmm. So you got the Vols plus 6.5, and you're calling for the outright win?
Yep, outright win. I'm also taking Ole Miss at Vandy. That's tonight at 6:30 local time down there. Vanderbilt is a 3-point favorite. I'm taking Vandy.
Yeah, I'm with you as well with Vandy. They get the win, they get the cover, and they're one win away from bowl eligibility.
All right, 5-10. That's what we need for this show, because I don't really know how great next week's slate is. The Iron Bowl, Auburn is going to get destroyed. Florida State's not even a good game anymore. Notre Dame, USC. Like, some of these matchups that we're really excited about, some of them happen on Friday. Like, isn't Oklahoma, West Virginia, isn't it like on Friday next week?
I believe so, but we have about a minute left, and we still have two games. We have Cincy, UCF, and Cuse, Notre Dame.
Yeah, so, okay. Cincy, UCF,
I got UCF minus 7 at home. Cincinnati has a great defense, but they have not seen the type of offense that Mackenzie Milton and that the Knights are going to throw out there. Just like Pullman a couple weeks ago, one of the best game day atmospheres, even though I don't have a TV in here. I'm pretty sure it's absolutely berserk down there in Orlando right now, so I'm going to take UCF.
I'm with you as well. I got UCF. They beat up on Ryan Porth's Bearcats. Final game, Cuse Notre Dame.
Cuse, 10.5. That's what they're getting at Yankee Stadium. I'm going to say Syracuse covers that. I think they make this a game into the fourth quarter, but Notre Dame's still good enough to win the game and finds a way to win next week again against USC, and then they go to the college football playoff.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take Syracuse as well. I desperately want to call for the outright win, but I just can't do it. Notre Dame too good in the trenches, but I'll take the Irish by about a touchdown.
Yeah, and it will be a game where I think they actually get pushed and we see what Notre Dame is made of, because I don't think we've seen that recently. I know the Pitt game, whatever. Like that was a game where they just kind of struggled one time with your boy Ian Book at quarterback, but him back today, I think he should be able to make enough plays. But Syracuse will try and save America and prevent us from watching Notre Dame get slaughtered in a college football playoff.
All right, that's going to do it for another edition of Saturday Tailgate. Coming up in just about 4 minutes right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, it'll be MTSU against Kentucky, pregame on the Blue Raider Radio Network. Later tonight here on 102.5 The Game, you got the Kings and the Preds at 6. In an hour from now, ESPN 94.9 Game 2 will have Alabama against the Citadel, followed by Auburn against Liberty. MTSU Kentucky, if you want the Kentucky feed, that'll be on 93.3 Classic Hits. And then at 1:45 today on 102.1 The Ville, it is UT Martin against TSU. Julian, have a good Thanksgiving, and we will reconvene next week.
Absolutely, man. Eat everything on your plate.
Exactly.
Everything. And more.
All right, that'll do it for Saturday Tailgate. Enjoy the college football. We will talk to you next week.